Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my first guest, Bassam Shakashiri, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at UW-Madison. He's a national proponent for science and education. And we're starting today by talking with him about handling hazardous chemicals and materials. That's kind of in the wake of the Ohio train derailment. So I hope you'll join in and tell us what you want to know about toxic chemicals. What do you want to know about the chemicals you come in contact with every day? Bassam can answer pretty much any science question you might have on your mind. And you can call us. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Bassam Shakashiri, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. Always a pleasure to be with you and with our listening audience.
There was a freight train derailment earlier this month. I'm sure our listeners all know about it. It happened in a small town, East Palestine, Ohio, near the Pennsylvania border. Tell us what happened there.
The first thing, Larry, I want to say is that I've been keeping up with all the reports that have been coming out about this incident. And I will focus primarily on talking about the chemistry part because the matter has become so politicized and it's of concern to me and of concern to other people. But on February 3rd in East Palestine, this is how they pronounce it there, a small town of about 5,000 residents in Ohio near the Pennsylvania border, a freight train derailed. The freight train had about 140-plus cars. About 50 cars left the tracks, and 20 of those cars were carrying hazardous materials. The most concerning chemical is vinyl chloride, V-I-N-Y-L, chloride, C-H-L-O-R-I-D. And five of those cars were carrying vinyl chloride. Vinyl chloride itself is carcinogenic. All of us know about vinyl chloride because we know about PVC, polyvinyl chloride. That's a tubing material. It's a very common industrial product. It is made by the polymerization of vinyl chloride. Vinyl chloride is a chemical that does not occur in nature. And we're always, always careful and concerned about the safety rules for handling all chemicals, especially the ones that are hazardous. So what happened is that there were many decisions that had to be made. Difficult decisions. One of them was to burn the vinyl chloride, which itself is a matter that results in producing more hazardous materials like hydrogen chloride and something called phosgene. It was done apparently to avoid an explosion of what it was contained, apparently properly inside the cars that derailed. Well, those are the details that are not quite clear yet. And the EPA, not only the EPA in Ohio, but EPA in Pennsylvania, the national EPA, the National Transportation Safety Board, everybody, the CDC, everybody is involved in this to make sure that all public health matters, all public health issues are attended to. So what else can I say about vinyl chloride? It's a gas, and it is transported as a liquid. It's compressed in two special containers inside the freight car. I'll just add one more thing, Larry. It's important for all of us to realize that every year there are nearly 1,000 freight car derailments. Most of them are handled well, and hope this one will continue to be handled well.
So I guess the question is, why burn the chemicals? And I guess it was to...
It was to avoid having the liquefied vinyl chloride explode. The leakage began to happen. So vinyl chloride, it is compressed and pressurized and transported that way. By the way, I should say very, very clearly, 90% of the vinyl chloride that is produced is used at the site where it is produced. Only about 10% of the vinyl chloride made in the United States is transported rather than used on site. Mm-hmm. These are numbers and pieces of chemical information that our audience might be interested in, but I think public health matters and the quality of life in the environment, in the immediate environment, is crucial for us to learn about and to insist that our elected officials are taking all the proper decisions to assure safety. And so the direct answer to your question, again, is to avoid an explosion. The railroad and state authorities began to release and burn the vinyl chloride about 3 days after this incident happened. It occurred on February 3rd, on Friday, February 3rd.
Mm. And I guess it was a wheel bearing. They think it was a wheel bearing in one rail car that caused the accident. What are some examples of proper ways to dispose of hazardous chemicals?
Well, it depends what the chemicals are. Hazards are a matter of concern to all of us. Larry, I don't want to be sounding flippant about this, but water can be a hazardous chemical. You can drown in water.
Sure.
But this is in no way taking away from the seriousness of the incidents that we must be controlling when chemicals are released into the environment, for example, all chlorinated hydrocarbons, of which vinyl chloride is one, are not very soluble in water, but they persist for a long time. Doesn't mean they're not soluble at all. They dissolve a little bit, and they get into the soil. And they have all kinds of effects. So the federal agencies and the state agencies, including our own Wisconsin EPA, are very concerned about all of these matters, are on guard, they're watchful, and they attempt to address the matter as quickly as possible.
What are some examples, or do you have some examples, Bassam, of hazardous chemicals that, you know, just the average person might come in contact with in their everyday life?
Well, there are several chemicals that are poisonous. Matter that releases sulfur-containing oxides, like sulfur dioxide or sulfur trioxide, are hazardous. We live in a very advanced scientific and technological society, and we have an understanding of what these chemicals are and how they behave, and we have rules and regulations, and if they're followed properly, then whatever potential damage can occur is carefully attended to. you, everyone in our listening audience, I hope everyone knows about Silent Spring, Rachel Carson's book about putting DDT and other chemicals into the environment. So we need to become literate, understanding what these chemicals are, how they benefit us. You know, most of what we've talked about so far, Larry, is, you know, adverse. PVC is a very common, useful chemical, and it's used worldwide, and it's used properly. It's used in automobiles. It's used in seat cushions. Well, we need to be concerned about the release of chemicals that can harm us and harm our environment.
Ms. Amshaka Shiri, our guest today, we are talking, to begin the show, we're talking about the freight train derailment and the chemical concerns associated with that derailment. We'll take other questions as well. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us, email address ideas@WPR.org. Let's take a call here. Jeff in Waukesha, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, Professor Shaka Shiri. This is your long-lost student, Jeff, calling again.
Hello, Jeff.
My question is I'm hearing more and more concerns, especially, you know, I like to cook, about forever chemicals that are, you know, where do you think, you know, we stand in terms of the environment, you know, with forever chemicals and, you know, since they are forever, what can we do about them?
Well, forever chemicals, we talked about them the last time, Larry, you may recall mm-hmm. that, the PFAAC.
Yeah.
They are under great scrutiny everywhere around the world, not only in Wisconsin, in America, but in Europe. And there are very good proposals made to ban them and ban their use so that we don't continue to put them into the environment. Once again, you know, the CDC and other federal agencies, state agencies are heavily involved in this. So I would say if you know that some product of any sort that you want to use might have one of those forever chemicals, then, you know, think twice about using it.
Yeah.
We all have to take individual as well as collective responsibility for what we do. So that's what I say, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you for calling. Tim in Chippewa Falls, let's go to you. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I'm wondering what the fuss is about cooking with gas. We've been cooking with gas for about 50 years, and we're hearing that they may phase out gas stoves because they emit harmful materials. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for this question. That relates to using natural gas, which is mostly methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. And it's much more potent than carbon dioxide. We all know about the effect of carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas on global warming, but methane is much more potent than because of its chemical properties and behavior. And so there are many, many studies and many advocacies for diminishing our use of gas. Now, I'm not trying to be careful about this, Larry, because it's important to understand the science behind those statements so that we can make intelligent choices and make intelligent decisions about what we use and what we expect our fellow citizens to use.
Bassam Shaka Shiri, our guest today. Great to have him with us as we talk science with him. Clara Neipert is our producer, by the way. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Join in with your questions today, talking science, getting a science update with Bassam Shakashiri, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at UW-Madison. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Judy in Fitchburg emailed us, Bassam. She says, rail tankers carry code numbers on hazardous waste. Wonders if you could comment on local emergency response officials' knowledge of what these codes mean. And, you know, in a small town like Palestine, Ohio, are emergency responders likely to be up to speed on the best way to dispose of hazardous chemicals, such as the vinyl chloride that spilled there?
That's a very good question, and thank you for emailing that question. Yes, all freight trains have codes on them, and they are meant to identify quickly what is carried. I mean, there are rules and laws for transporting materials not only within the boundaries of a state but across state lines. And so it's important for the local authorities to act immediately upon the occurrence of an incident of any sort, just to avoid the potential release of hazardous material. As I said before, you know, every year in America, there are nearly 1,000 derailments of freight trains, but only a small number of them have involved hazardous materials, and it's crucial for us to learn more about the interactions that people, we human beings, and our fellow creatures that inhabit the planet, about the interactions of these chemicals that are not naturally occurring and how they affect us and how they affect our environment.
Mm-hmm. Mike in Lake Mills has something for us. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Hello, this is Mike.
Yeah. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to add, thank you. Wanted to add onto the question that one of the callers had about the problem with using natural gas for cooking, and Dr. Shakashiri had mentioned that there's atmospheric warming potential greater than carbon dioxide. But I think that the issue at hand, and if you could comment on it, is that burning natural gas inside of a home, the gases that are given off aren't easily removed. And one of the gases is oxide of nitrogen that are created from a hot burning flame. I think that the manufacturers are always trying to err on the side of not producing carbon monoxide, which would be from the having a rich mixture, but rather going with the lean mixture. And so it's the same kind of pollutant like smog that creates smog. I'm sure that he could explain that. But one of the things that I wanted to ask about is I've heard that the manufacturers of these stoves have known for many years that that they could control the flame better with a different valve mechanism, different flame controller, but the problem is the price. It's just too expensive for a home appliance versus a, you know, industrial appliance type of thing.
Hmm.
Thank you so much, Mike, for your what you're sharing. Yes, you beautifully illustrate what happens with advances in science and advances in technology. We learn more, and we have to exercise what I and other people call good judgment about the use of what we have as we advance science and technology, and also be very concerned about the economic consequences of it. So, at home, the oxides of nitrogen are released, yes. How well known this is? Well, it's becoming more known now. You and I are talking about it, and others are talking about it. And I think it's important to for all of us to take responsible action for caring about how we live our daily lives and how we make decisions about products that come our way, so that we can participate fully in protecting our planet and protecting its inhabitants, and of course protecting ourselves from damage. And there are very important economic factors, as you correctly point out, Mike.
Yeah. I've noticed in some articles, if you have a vent over the stove, an air vent, that this can be helpful in eliminating some of the problem associated with natural gas.
Yes, it would help with that for people inside the house, as long as the vent is working properly and going outdoors. Yes, ventilation is very important. And learning more about the atmosphere and what's in the atmosphere, what we put into the atmosphere, is part of a very major effort that all of us should engage in to improve our literacy, our understanding of science and its connections to our lives and the connections of others' lives in society.
Mike, thanks again. Appreciate the call. I want to go to Rold next in La Crosse. Rold, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. With vinyl chloride and other plastics, they're plasticizers, phthalates and bisphenols. What do we know about those on our impact on our gender? They're also known as gender-bending compounds. What do we know about that as far as its impacts on our health and also long-term? I guess they leach out of vinyl, which we use as siding on most of our houses.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you, Roald. The Industrial Revolution has helped us a great deal, but we have relied too heavily on fossil fuels, petroleum products, and so on. And plasticizers, along with plastics, you know, they've been very useful to us. Health concerns, public health concerns, are the purview, of course, of experts in this area. And there are many studies about the effect of plasticizers, the effect of all kinds of release of such material into the environment, the effect on health and other inhabitants of the planet. So this is a general response to your question, Roald. I do not know specifically of what I might direct you to, but I promise you I will look it up and post it on my website and invite you and everyone else to visit my website, scifun.org, scifun.org, where I post some comments every time I visit with Larry on the air.
Yeah. Roald, thank you very much for calling. Carl in West Dallas. Hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, I have a question about long trains that have an engine pulling the train and an engine on the other end pushing the train. Now, wouldn't it be safer if it was just pulling? I mean, from my days as being a kid with a train set, if I was pushing my train, they are more likely to be in a crash. And I was just wondering about the safety.
Huh.
I'm sorry, Carl. I don't know enough to make a statement about that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's interesting.
What do you know about it, Carl?
Well, like I said, just from my experience of being a kid, and that was, you know, 60 years ago, the trains that when I was pushing them, you know, they'd be more likely to derail. And pulling them, you know, it seemed a lot safer, and I wouldn't have as many, you know, crashes and having to re-rail all my trains.
Hmm.
Perhaps someone in our listening audience can email or call with a good response to Carl's comment and questions.
Yeah, yeah, Carl, thanks very much. We may get somebody shooting us an email or giving a call and having a comment. Allison and Racine, we'll go to you next. Hi, Allison.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to bring up two examples about regulations and get a reaction from Professor Shakashiri. My husband is from Italy, and his family has come to visit us several times. And his dad one year commented, we saw a train transporting coal, and he was really surprised to notice that the cars filled to the brim with coal didn't have covers on them. And he said, that's really weird that they're allowed to transport coal that way, because in Italy, those cars need to be covered so that debris can't be, like, particles can't be brought up into the air. And the other example I wanted to bring up is with gas stoves. I believe, at least in Italy, building codes and regulations require that there be extractors and ventilators that take air from cooking surfaces outside. And so I just grapple with sort of trying to not become frustrated with knowing that regulations and things could be different to protect people and citizens, but in this country, they're just not. And I'm wondering if Professor Shakashiri could just maybe comment on grappling with trying to not become frustrated and overwhelmed with that knowledge.
Allison, thank you.
Thank you, Allison. Yes, my first comment is to thank you for thinking about what you just shared with us. It's very important for all of us to be aware and to learn what is going on by way of regulations and how they are enforced. It's important also to control whatever frustration we develop, because frustrations don't solve problems. It's action, responsible action, that we and the authorities take that can help solve problems. Regulations are to be continuously and continually examined, and the people who are enforcing them are to be trained properly. This is one of the distinguishing aspects of an enlightened society, and it's important for us to learn about the regulations and expect the authorities to enforce them. And if we don't like the regulations, then we have the means to change them. Allison, I share your feelings, but please try not to be frustrated, because that does not help solve the problem.
Mm. Erica in Mercer, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just kind of curious. I'm hearing a lot with natural gas, and I'm kind of curious, where does propane sit on this? The same, different, well, better, worse? You know, they're related, but they're not exactly the same.
Yeah.
They're not the same. Natural gas is methane, CH4. Propane is a higher hydrocarbon. They both burn. We use them in our gas grills. We use them all over the place. Yes, there are technological issues related to the use of these chemicals. There are economic issues also, and all should be looked at carefully and together, so that we all, meaning we, the consumers, and the manufacturers and the distributors, all work for the common good. By that, I especially mean handling and using and benefiting from all of these chemicals in safe, productive, and enjoyable ways.
Mm. Eric, thank you for calling. Rick in South Range, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. I have a question on the combustion of natural gas. My daughter's furnace water pump failed yesterday, and they were almost without heat for the whole night in Minneapolis. My 1997 gas furnace puts all the combustion products, the carbon dioxide and water vapor, up my flue. And I'm wondering, what's the benefit of condensing the water to pump it to a drain, which adds another link in the chain for failure?
That's a question for a technical person that knows more about heat pumps than I do. That's an engineering question, Rick. I don't know the answer to your question.
We'll take that up maybe on, we have our Thursday shows where we have our builders and so forth on, and that's a good question to ask.
And I will be listening on Thursday because I do want to know the answers that is being, to the question that's being asked, yeah.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it. You know, I mentioned we would talk about this artificial intelligence program. It's called what, ChatGPT or something like that? It's artificial intelligence that can create term papers or maybe sermons or whatever else you want.
Yes. These are... artificial intelligence is with us. This is part of what's called large language models, LLM. These are artificial intelligence tools that can read or summarize or translate text and predict some future words in a sentence, for example. And then they're generated. The one that is was released last November. It's called ChatGPT, C-H-A-T, then capital G, capital P, capital T, which stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer. This is all happening. Larry, this is part of the electronic revolution. I mentioned earlier the industrial revolutions and how we have benefited from it and how recently in the past 50, 60 years have learned much more about some adverse effects that relate to the industrial revolution. But the electronic revolution is in its infancy, and all kinds of developments are being made. We have to be very careful about the technology that we're talking about here. We have to be careful about our relationships as human beings with technology. Let me be clear about this. We have to be careful that we use technology to benefit us, not to harm us. That's a whole topic we can get into at a much deeper level some other time. But I just want to make sure that everyone should realize and accept that ChatGPT and other artificial intelligence developments are with us, and we should take them seriously, and we should pay attention to them, and we should learn what they can do and what they cannot do. Once an invention is made, you cannot disinvent it.
Yeah.
I have used this example with you before, Larry.
Yeah.
Once the gun is invented, you can't disinvent it. But we can decide whether or not we want to use the gun, when we want to use the gun. So the relationship between technology and human beings is crucial. And all of technology is produced by human beings. So it is the use to which it is put that's important.
Yeah. Paul in Slinger has something for us. Hi, Paul.
Howdy. Good morning. Tell me which produces more carbon dioxide, monoxide, and nitrous oxide, a vehicle driving using gasoline or an electric car, which is taking electricity, considering line loss and the coal producing this electrical energy through generators, burning the coal through a boiler system with the release of gases out of their flue stack.
It's a very good question. Once again, it relates to how the electricity is generated. And we need to use non-fossil fuel sources to generate energy. I think electric vehicles are with us. They're more accepted. They're becoming more economically viable. I think we need to be looking at those from the market point of view, from our personal use. We need to be taking full advantage of that. And then think about the question that you raise in terms of the release of different greenhouse gases and their effect on the environment. All very good questions, Paul.
Paul, thank you. Brad in Hudson, your turn. Hi, Brad.
I had the answer for Carl's question about trains, why some have locomotives in the middle or at the end.
Yeah.
I wondered the same thing myself, and I talked to some guy from a railroad last summer, and he said that trains are so heavy nowadays that the couplers or hitches will break on them, so they have to put locomotives in the middle or at the end to kind of push them. So that not only are you being pulled, they're also being pushed. There's not so much stress on the couplers.
Okay, that makes sense.
Wonderful engineering responses. this is what I like about the openness of discourse, Larry, not only on your program, especially on your program, and how we all get to be participating in connecting science and technology with society. It's so crucial. Thank you, Brad.
Yeah, thanks very much, Brad. And Bassam, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. And I'm sure people should go to scifund.org and you'll have some comments on today's show.
We will have comments there, and we invite everyone else to visit and look at the variety of offerings that we have, all in keeping with advancing knowledge and serving society. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, but thank you, Bassam. Bassam Shakashiri, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at UW-Madison. He comes by every so often to talk with us about science. Well, tell you what, we're going to take a little tour of the stratosphere. Coming up next, our weather guy's with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.